front of a live studio audience.
Fire up the projectors, turn on your TVs, and adjust your antennas. It's time for the Screen Addicts Podcast with your hosts, Chris, Steven, and Jeremy.
And welcome back to the Screen Addicts Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris. Is Chewie a boy or a girl, Viegas?
I am Steven Red Sand Sosa.
I am Jeremy, living the porg life.
My name is Mikey, and green milk can't be that bad.
Oh, and that is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, coming in with a bang. Mikey from the Big Screen Breakdown. Mikey, thank you for joining us, man.
It is my pleasure, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Well, guys, Mikey, go ahead and tell all of our the podcast world where you're coming from, what you do, and who you do it with.
Well, coming from Southern California, recording a podcast, as you just said, called Big Screen Breakdown, where my wife and I host it, and we talk all things movies, TVs, theories, speculations, and everything that the people listening are probably into. So, yeah, it's lots of fun.
Awesome. And, you know, the reason we brought Mikey in tonight, well, one of the reasons we brought Mikey in tonight is because we needed a Jedi expert, a Jedi mind.
Jedi master.
Hey.
For our last Jedi review tonight. And, you know, I listen to Mikey's show every week, and I know this man knows his stuff.
Thank you.
He has graciously accepted to be on the show, and can't wait to get to that. But before we get into our review of The Last Jedi, we like to do a little segment where we do a recently watched. And Jeremy, as always, man, what have you been watching, my man?
Actually, this week, I got nothing, so move along to the next one.
Do you ever watch anything? This is like the third consecutive week where you haven't watched anything.
Dude, I really haven't. I come home from work, and I usually just fall asleep.
You old man.
I know.
And then I have to bring it up. Did you watch your crappy Cowboys?
Yeah!
Well, of course.
Dude, that's
watch
something.
That.
How are you going to let a piece of paper win a game for you? You know what I'm saying?
An index card.
Hey, that's, paper beats rock, buddy.
No, paper beats Raiders, apparently.
Yeah. Rock Raiders.
Jeez. I don't want to even get into this whole weird football weekend was just, it was crazy. There was
this whole damn season has been just...
By a millimeter or a mile, it doesn't matter. Win's a win.
Who are you, Vin Diesel?
Damn right.
Just drop some Fast and Furious.
Jeez.
I'll allow it.
All right. Well, let me see. I'll go with my recently watched... And I only got a couple things. I started a new series on Netflix, The Magicians.
Oh, and I heard that was good.
It's kind of slow starting. They're building up everybody's story, obviously. But it's kind of cool. I like the magic in it. Not too bad. So getting into that, I think I'm like 6 episodes in, and there's 2 seasons. So that's going to be fun. And then I also watched a movie that I probably should not have shown my kids. I watched a Netflix movie called Chappie.
That's okay.
Is that Neil Blomkamp? Or is there another Chappie? Oh, okay.
Well, there's Louis Gossett Jr. in Iron Eagle. But that's just the character name.
Yeah, this one had Hugh Jackman, and that's about the only big name I think it was in it. I don't remember, because, well, about 5 minutes into the movie, this robot and all these British people start dropping the MF bombs and this and this, and I have my 8-year-old and my 3-year-old sitting right here watching this movie with me.
Oh, jeez.
And but I'm they like robots.
Well, yeah, they love robots, you know, and the whole, like when I read about the movie, it says, oh, it's this robot that's trying to make its way in the world. And I'm like, oh, that can't be that bad.
It's just like the Iron Giant.
Yeah. This isn't Short Circuit, Chris. Come on, man. It's rated R.
This is the Neil Blomkamp version, dude. Yeah. No.
Wally from hell.
It was funny, though. I mean, Chappie the robot, they turned him into, like, this British gangster. So he was wearing these gold chains, and he painted himself. It looked like tattoos. It was so weird.
Didn't you see Chappie, Jeremy? Jeremy?
Yeah.
You saw it, right?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
I love that movie, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for an adult.
I guess if you're
not an 8-year-old so much.
Fair enough.
Dude, you're talking to someone that saw Aliens when they were 4.
True.
Yeah, my dad really didn't have much of a parental guidance on me either. If there was any nudity or sex, he would close my eyes. But violence, language, it was open season, buddy.
Yeah. I did grow up with all the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, so.
Well, you know, even movies about kids and families for our time, there was a lot of vulgar language, you know, like Bad News Bears, Goonies. They cussed a lot in those movies, and those are, you know, family-friendly movies.
That's about all I watched this week. I did watch my Broncos win on Thursday night, but it's pointless, so who cares? All right, Steven, what do you got?
Oh, man, aside from the normal rotation of Christmas films that we have been going through, I was excited to see that the Santa Claus trilogy has been added to Netflix in full HD, and I was going to buy the Blu-ray set, but then I was like, $30 right now. I can wait, you know, and then Netflix came in the clutch, and they pretty much saved me by uploading the HD version, so I was watching them again. It's so weird watching a movie you've seen so many times over and over, and then it just looks so different. It's like watching a whole new movie. But, I mean, the quality of the third one still sucks, but, you know, it's like, what can you do? I actually watched a new Christmas movie that came out last year called Office Christmas Party with Jason Bateman, TJ Miller, Jennifer Aniston, Olivia Munn, and a lot of up-and-coming actors. And it was pretty good. You know, let me think about it. It was okay. With the talent involved, you should have expected just a new comedy classic, something that you could watch every single year, because there wasn't one person in that cast that I didn't like. I did, however, feel a little bit surprised that it just wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. Still some good moments in it, and Kate McKinnon is in it, and she is great. I'm surprised she's gonna be like the new Kristen Wiig. She's gonna have one breakout role and she's gonna be off into the, you know, stratosphere of films, like, you know, Kristen Wiig was. Well, granted, Kristen Wiig doesn't really do as much now, but, you know, it was okay. I don't know if I would recommend it. Jeremy, you might like it, because TJ Miller, I mean, he's one of the bright spots in Silicon Valley for you, but it's okay. But, you know, it's just one of those movies. And aside from the other ones that we will talk about later, I think that's about it. Oh, no, Chuck. I finished season 2 of Chuck, and I got it from the library, right? And so season 3 is on hold because some idiot didn't turn it back in. It's overdue. So I might have to go about it.
Dang, you're
in
talking in those 90s world problems, buddy.
Right? I know, right? Stamp my bookmark and give me Chuck. I mean, it's so hooked on it. It's so funny. And the cliffhanger of season 2 just I'm like, are you serious? I gotta go to the library right now. I usually watch it at work because when I'm at home, me and the missus will watch stuff. But if I'm in a show that I like on my own, I'll just go through it at work. And I was like, I don't have time for this meeting. I gotta go get season 3 of Chuck. Hold down the fort.
Isn't that like on Amazon Prime or something?
It was on Netflix for years. And I had said to my wife, I'm like, hey, we can watch it. And she really wanted to, but we just never got around to it. And before you know it, they took it off Netflix. So it's like, well, it's on Prime, but you have to pay per episode for it or buy the whole season.
They do that with it?
Yeah, there's some shows that... You remember when I started binge-watching Mr. Robot again? And the first season was free, but then season 2 you had to pay for. I'm like, what the crap is this? This sucks. But then... Eventually, they released it for free, so I was able to catch up on season 2. But they'll do that with certain series. That's like the X-Files, man. The X-Files was all on Netflix. I was starting to get in the groove of binge-watching it, and then they pulled it. And then the only way that I can watch it now is if I go to iTunes or Comcast or Prime and pay per episode, unless I go about it in other means that I won't disclose.
We will never do that on this show.
Never.
Of course not.
I'm paying not per season. All. Thank you, people.
Yes, naturally.
But other than that, man, that's all I got.
Cool. All right, Mikey, man, what have you, anything watched this week interesting?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I've been watching the Santa Claus stuff. I literally watched Santa Claus last night because I was like, it's on Netflix. So I love those movies. And I'll agree the third one's not the best, but the first two are pretty great.
That's what I'm talking about.
And going through the Christmas movies, Netflix-wise, you know, my past couple of weeks had been, the reason you guys got me on the show, I was going through... You know, the whole Star Wars saga before I went to go see The Last Jedi. But before that, I was binge-watching a lot of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia because I actually pulled that show off of Netflix. So I wanted to get in as many episodes as I could. You guys It's Always Sunny fans?
I missed out on the last 4, but it started in 06. So yeah, I got through a lot of the seasons before I just stopped.
Yeah, they have a lot of hit and miss episodes, but some of those, like, right around, like, anywhere between seasons 3 to 6, it's like, it's gold.
I can honestly say I think I have never seen an episode. So
it's a great show. Maybe very funny.
Maybe something I have to pick up. I'm running out of stuff to watch.
Well, it's not on Netflix anymore, so you might have to pay per season.
Damn it.
How is that even possible, Chris? How are you running out of things to watch? It's almost impossible.
Well, I'm running out of good things to watch. I mean, and you'll see when we talk about our indie flick fix here in just a minute.
Well, that's another one of Steven's mistakes.
I like how he's blaming you for this, and I'm pretty sure I...
He's the indie guy.
Well...
This is Chris's fault.
Yes, it is. I'm shouldering all the responsibility for this one.
Thank you.
Yeah, Steven didn't come up with this list. I did, and I got it from our the podcast network that we're part of, the Indie Popcorn podcast network, and they had put out some. They said it was some indie Christmas films. But, you know.
Jeremy's trying to throw Die Hard out there. I'm like, Jeremy, indie films, not big budget summer blockbusters.
At this point, I don't care. A good Christmas movie.
Gotta respect Die the Hard. Process. Respect the process.
Okay, so Mikey, you know, there's two kinds of people in this world. Die Hard's a Christmas movie or Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Which one are you?
I am a fan, and I would say Die Hard is a Christmas movie because I also put Batman Returns in the Christmas movie category where a lot of people don't as well.
Yes, it is!
If I can't support Batman Returns being a Christmas movie without also supporting Die Hard, so both of them are Christmas movies.
Yes.
You are welcome here, sir.
All right, so indie flick fix. Steven, do you have the the thing pulled up by chance?
Oh, the synopsis of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Go ahead and rattle it off, my man.
Okay, and, you know, I feel as if... Okay, well, I'll get into it whenever I come into support of a film. Okay, for this week, the Indie Flick Fix is a film called Happy Christmas that was made in 2014 starring Anna Kendrick, Melanie Lynskey, Mark Webber, Lena Dunham, and writer-director Joe Swanberg himself starring in the film. And after a breakup, Jenny, played by Anna Kendrick, moves in with her writer sister Kelly and her filmmaker husband, brother, and their child. And despite a rocky start, Jenny's influence helps Kelly realize that an evolution in her life, career, and relationship is necessary for her happiness. Taken from IMDb, of course. And and you know, that's a very vague description for a film that is in itself very vague.
And you know,
that description pretty much covers it beat by beat.
Okay, this is my fault. I feel like I should have set you guys up for this as soon as we were going to watch it, but I got kind of busy with work, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to let them dive in deep. This movie is part of a movement, an independent film movement that was started by the Duplass brothers, Joe Swanberg himself, Lynn Shelton. It had a group of filmmakers, and what they had called this particular style of indie filmmaking, it was called mumblecore. So mumblecore filmmaking that started in the early aughts is basically exactly like this. What it does is it takes, say you look at the entire timeline of someone's life from A to Z, and what it does is it just takes a couple of days out of that timeline, plucks it out, and puts it on the screen. And that's all you get. Like, there's really no other explanation for any of this. So if I had, I felt like I should have set you guys up a little bit for this, but I thought it would be more entertaining this way.
Man, let me tell you. So, you know, I was prepping Mikey for this week and this and said, hey, I'm sending you the movie.
Yes.
On iTunes. And I told him, I said, dude, please don't hate me if this movie sucks. And as soon as I sent it to him, I sat down and watched it that night. And I was like, damn, Mikey's going to hate me.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, man. And, you know, what the interesting thing is Joe Swanberg, and I read about a couple of his films that he's made. All his films are made with the dialogue being totally improvised.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
The whole movie is, the dialogue is improvised. And that is just, that's insane to me. That's, I mean, me knowing that going into the movie, I was a little more intrigued into it, but it still wasn't that great.
That's another aspect of mumblecore, is the largely improvisational aspect of it.
Hmm.
So, all right, Mikey. So, what are you? I mean, your thoughts on this movie, and on our indie flick fix, we do a non-spoiler review. If we recommend the movie, we want people to go see it. If not,
but, yeah. Okay. Well, I had no idea what was happening in this movie without revealing any major plot points, if there's even any in there. Knowing now that it comes from we're gonna take let's say a week out of this person's life and just show you exactly what happens, I guess I see what they were trying to do, but it's just I honestly feel like nothing happens in the movie. And the thing that you read the synopsis and I was like, oh, I get, okay, yeah, I guess that, it's just, I don't know, so much, but all my entertainment from this movie came from the weird-looking baby that was cast in this movie. It's a baby that looks like a full-grown man squished into a baby's body. It's way too big to be in a high chair. It was weird, but...
It's Benjamin Button!
There's something going on with that baby. I was like, oh, they cast the guy who played Mini-Me, because that can't be a baby. He looks too much like a man. It was weird.
Yeah, a little bit of trivia is that the baby is actually writer-director Joe Swanberg's son. So, I was like thinking, man, they've got a really good rapport with this kid. How does he know how to make him laugh like that? I'm like, oh, well, it's his own kid.
Well, that makes sense. Well, I apologize, Joe, if you're listening, and I know you are. Your baby's adorable. Yeah. I just think he's too big for a high chair.
He's way too happy, too. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, I was totally ready for that baby just to bust out with, like, a bottle of whiskey and a cigarette.
Right? Right? Like, he's the baby from Roger Rabbit.
He's Baby mom. Herman. Or not Baby Herman. Yeah, Baby Herman.
Oh, man.
My stogie!
Stogie!
Oh, man.
Oh, shit. That's perfect, Chris. I love that.
Yeah. All right.
Man, this is see how this is once you peel the layers of Happy Christmas is when it gets good.
No, oh, yeah, start... and it's supposed to be a Christmas movie. Didn't really feel that at all except for minor decorations.
Yeah, nothing. You know what's funny about that is that usually when a movie takes place in Christmas, they're smart, the production value is good enough to notice that, hey, let's film around Christmas time because there's a lot of natural production value everywhere around us. So whatever we shoot, if we have establishing shots down streets, we'll still see lights and garland and stuff. There was none of that. Nope. Like, it's supposedly a couple of days before Christmas, and there is none of that except for in the house when they're opening gifts in what is the last 5 minutes of the movie. Do they have their tree? And I'm thinking, wait a second, was that tree there the whole time, or did they just stick that here for this shot? Because it does not feel like Christmas.
And then,
at all,
why call the movie Happy Christmas? Like, you're gonna
there's
put
nothing really happy about
well
it.
Not only that, but they could have, like, they literally could have filmed this in June and called it, like, My Crazy Sister-in-Law, and it would have been the exact same movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh.
Hey,
go ahead, Chris.
Just saying, you know, I thought maybe it would be a little bit better. Anna Kendrick being in it, you know, she's becoming kind of big with the Pitch Perfect movies, and she's not half bad actress, you know. She's pretty decent. She's amazing on Twitter. I love following her account.
Oh, yeah, she's funny.
She's hilarious. But, dude, it didn't hit at any point with this movie with me. So, Steven, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You picked it. You know, I will say this about Anna Kendrick. Like, watching this and her performance, I mean, she seems to be, but this also is a problem with the narrative where they don't go into much exploration of each individual character. I mean, they kind of gloss over everything. Again, with this style of mumblecore, that's what they're supposed to do, which is kind of unfair to a fan or a viewer who's dedicating X amount of time watching the film. But I will say, though, that there was a lot of emotional, like, she was playing off emotionally a lot in this movie, and I kind of wanted to know why, and maybe that's kind of the mystery, but watching her perform in this reminded me of how good she was in something like Up in the Air, you know, because she's really good in that movie, and there's other movies, and Joe Swanberg did another movie with her and Jake Johnson and Olivia Wilde called Drinking Buddies, which is, it's another mumblecore movie, but it's more played for comedy, so it's not so down, and you know, you watch something like that, and you're like, okay, well, this could be interesting too, but, you know, they end up just talking about, you know, torrid romance novels and stuff like that, and I don't know, I guess that's the intention of the filmmakers, to make you feel like you're part of the conversation that they're having or something like that.
I was not.
Yeah, me either. I was like, what is going on with this book they're trying to write, and
are they trying to call man's penis all sorts of weird names?
It got uncomfortable at a point. And then who's the random friend? Like, there's a random friend in there that they don't explain where she came from. The love interest, what was cool is that the love interest don't even know the guy's name, but I know that him and Anna Kendrick were both in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I was like, hey, that's Stephen Stills from Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. But he was just in the house one day. Like, where'd he come from? Like, I'm not a fan of this style.
Yeah.
I like a little explanation for who people are and what their motivations are and what the heck they're even doing.
I will definitely say this. If you didn't like this, I mean, you probably are good to steer clear the rest of them in this mobile core type of filmmaker because they're all the same like this. You know, it's funny because Mark Webber, the guy, the love interest, like he was in a film called The Hot Estate, which was an adaptation of Ethan Hawke's novel of the same name, which Ethan Hawke adapted and wrote and directed himself. And it's just, it seems like that, like he's dealing with this internal animosity with a love interest. And he's a lot better in that movie, obviously, because with that movie, there's a clear narrative when where it's trying to go. But here, yeah, they just show up. And, like, Lena Dunham, who... I've never seen Girls, but I'm not really... I can't really say I'm a fan of hers, because I don't really... I haven't seen a lot, but... Like, some of the stuff, the interaction with her and Anna Kendrick was good. You could feel like they had a good rapport with one another, and much like Melanie Lynskey. But, again, it doesn't really take you anywhere. And you don't know how she's... Has she been her friend since they were kids? Like, are they reuniting from childhood? Like, none of that is ever explained.
Never explained. She just shows up.
And they can handle that with one line of dialogue. You know, just like, yeah, I can't believe, you know, it's been since so long since I've seen you. Yeah, and we grew up together.
Or yeah,
you know,
or even something. Remember that time in third grade when blah, blah, blah happened. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Something. Just to establish that they have a connection.
I don't know. But hey, I said, Jeremy, you're picking the next one, okay?
You guys are going to watch Die Hard.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yeah, Die Hard.
Blow all the rules out the window.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the crazy thing,
it's an indie flick, wasn't it?
I just saw Happy Christmas has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's insane.
Wow.
Yes, and I'm one of them.
Jeez,
why doesn't it have like a 5%?
Honestly. This is, I don't know. Then the conflict towards the end of the movie, and then it just gets like washed over. Like these people, like I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so
way to go, Chris.
It was fun to watch, though.
It was something. It was something. Anyway, so let's wrap this.
Yeah, you should have let us vet your list before you posted it.
Probably. You just wish Black Christmas would have won. I guess, I mean, that would have been a lot funnier. At least people died in that movie. Anyway. All right, so last...
Would you have wanted to do the original or the remake that came out? Like,
the original. The original for sure. Okay, so from one indie movie to the next indie movie. Well... It's not really an indie movie, but, you know. Pretty close, yeah. I know, like I said before, there is a lot of reviews out there for The Last Jedi already. But we wanted to throw our hat in the ring and give our 2 cents, of course. So, as we usually do, we're going to do a non-spoiler review first, and then jump into a little bit more, like, character development, stuff like that. Just break it down a little bit more. First initial reactions, as you're walking out of the theater, Steven, what'd you think, man? And try to keep it under 20 minutes.
Fine. Since since I'm not unleashed, I will just say I am glad that it took us a couple of days to digest what we saw instead of just initially going into record, even though I wanted to. I was like, come on, let's just record tonight. Let's just talk about it right now. But with a movie like this, it seemed that it benefited me from a critical perspective to take some time to kind of, you know, think about what I saw, because that's the one thing that this movie is. This is the one Star Wars film where writer-director Rian Johnson is asking the viewer to think. He's not just giving you, you know, A to Z like all the other Star Wars movies. I mean, there's some twists and turns in some of the previous entries, but this one he's actually making you think about it. And, I mean, I don't know what people were expecting when you got the guy who did Brick and Brothers Bloom and Looper. All of these movies are very heavy in thought processing. Yes, they do have a lot of great visual activity, but they make you look deeper into the subject matter, which is what The Last Jedi did. And of course, it's funny because, like, after a while, I could think of all the few minor issues I had, but unlike most people, it seems, those minor issues didn't deter me from enjoying this film. I still really, really, really enjoyed this movie. I liked what they presented. And yes, there's some things that I'm like, eh, you know, it wasn't necessary. But again, it didn't ruin the experience for me. And, I, you know, I'll just leave it at that. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
Cool. Mikey, okay. As you walk out of the theater, first initial thoughts, man.
Well, it actually took me a minute to walk out of the theater. Once the movie was over, I was kind of stuck in my chair, like, just with an eyebrow raised. And, you know, my wife turns to me, she's like, well, what'd you think? And I don't know yet. And, you know, you know, Steven, you put it so well, is that the movie really does make you think. And it's nothing like what... like what you would expect out of a Star Wars film. And I think the reason that it's so split is that people are very upset that it's, like, not what they think. And you spend 2 years since The Force Awakens just speculating on, this is exactly what I think Episode 8 is going to have. This is how I think the story's going to go. And my thoughts are so smart. This is the only place that it can go. Of course, I figured it out. And then it doesn't. It shifts completely. It just... boom, banks right, and you're like, oh, okay, now I have to process that. And walking out the first time, I did enjoy the film, but I told my wife, I have to see that again. Like, I have to get out of my own head. I have to take my own Last Jedi script and put that to the side and just really, really embrace what Rian Johnson is trying to say through this film. Because just from watching it, there's some amazing moments in this movie. Regardless, but to really capture what he was trying to say, I had to go see it again, and I did, and liked it even more the second time. So I'm a fan of this movie. I am on the side of good. But yeah, the community, especially, some people are really destroyed about this. And
oh yeah,
like I heard a great quote once that said, nobody hates Star Wars as much as Star Wars fans. Because if they don't like what's up there, man, they will tear it apart.
Damn, that's so perfect.
Yeah. But I'm a fan. I actually enjoy this movie very much. To prepare for tonight, I even went and watched it again. I had a 3:30 showing this afternoon. So.
Nice.
Yeah. I've seen it 3 times now, and yeah, I like it more and more each time.
Good. All right, Jeremy, what do you got, man? First initial reactions.
Okay. When it ended after its 2.5 hour runtime, I was smiling ear to ear, mainly because I didn't go into this one like I did The Force Awakens with any preconceived notions about knowing what's going to be displayed on screen. I spoiled that one for myself. This one I did not. And I loved everything I saw from Rian Johnson. I don't understand the hate for it. It is what it is. It does make you think.
Yeah, it does.
And if you didn't see Looper or Brick or, yeah, you damn, that's your bad, because you should have known what you were in for. And Kathy Kennedy gave him carte blanche to pretty much do whatever the hell he wanted, and he did do whatever the hell he wanted. And yeah, he did a lot to continue storylines and move along storylines, and some ended and some new ones began. And yeah, I love it. It's a great movie, and it's only the middle part of a trilogy. 9 comes out in 2 years, so we'll see what J.J. Abrams can do for 9.
Okay. Well, let's see. My first initial reactions, and the more I sit and think about it, and the more, you know, like Steven said, it took me a little bit to process the movie. I wish I had at a time like Mikey does to go watch it multiple times. Because that would be, oh man, that would help a lot. But, you know, the first thought I had when coming out of it, I thought, damn, was this more of a parody movie to me? Like a Spaceballs? There was so much funny stuff into this movie that seemed out of place from a Star Wars movie to me. Mm. Like some of the beginning first jokes in at the beginning of the movie to some of the in jokes and stuff like that. There was just a lot of it there for me, and that stood out to me more than anything. Is just the fun they had with it, which it was fun. And I did enjoy it. It just seemed like it was too much for a Star Wars film for me. I don't know. Like, I guess, I said I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I do watch the movies, but I don't watch them on a regular basis and this and that. So I think I'm going into this movie and I'm thinking the Lord of the Rings seriousness type of deal. You know?
Yeah.
And... And I obviously did not get that out of this movie. It was, like I said, there was a lot of funny things in it. And the damn porgs. I can't look at a porg and not think of you, Jeremy. But, you know. So, okay. That was the first reactions for the movie. Do you guys... I know all three of y'all love the movie. Do y'all understand where the hate is coming from, though?
I do, there's a lot of hate for different areas, and for most of them, I do. Like you said, Chris, there are, I can agree, like I said, I am a huge fan of this film, but is it perfect? No, not at all. And there's plenty in there that I don't like, but it's not enough to make me not like the film. Some of the humor, like that opening joke, I thought was great initially, but I think they held it out too long. I think that, you know, you have the first initial reaction, which is a callback to The Force Awakens, how that movie kind of opened with that first joke, and then... Mm-hmm. You know, but it ended right there. But this one, they kind of held it out too long to where it got a little old for me. So people, you know, when you're saying like, oh, there's comedy in parts where I didn't expect, I can understand that. Without going into any spoilers yet, a lot of people are upset with the treatment of, with the direction Rian Johnson took Luke Skywalker in. I can understand that because for a lot of people, for a whole generation of people, Luke Skywalker is... their hero, and I feel that people have deified him to a point where they can't see him any other way than that's in their head. And I'm not saying they're wrong for that, but you're really putting any filmmakers in a tight spot if they want to explore more realism in a character.
Right.
What I don't get is the people that are saying, oh, this movie was pointless. It nothing happened in it. There was no character development. Like those, I don't understand. I just want to be like, I think you missed it. Did you take a really long bathroom break? Like, what happened? Cause,
oh yeah, there was plenty to move along the story.
You know, that's the only hate I don't understand. Yeah. People saying like, saying literally, there's no character development, and I'm like, I just think you missed it, man. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's. Mine.
That's good. Steven, I know you're a critical one. You like to dive deep into the movies, and you know, Rian Johnson, you knowing a bunch of his works and stuff. Do you think the reason is getting all this hate is because there's not a lot of people looking much into it? Do you have to give it the two watch to get it?
I think, Mikey said it best. He said that Star Wars fans, you know, hate it more than anyone else if they reject something. And I think in this instance, with something like Luke Skywalker, because he's my favorite character of all time in the Star Wars universe, So I'm watching and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of a bummer how things unfold with him. But again, I'm, you know, willing to look at the end result here. I'm looking at his intentions. At times were a bit, okay, so you're willing to do this to Kylo Ren while he's asleep, but then not now. And there wasn't really, you know, I think that people, if they don't get a clear explanation for something, they automatically just assume that it's lazy writing or it's just a lack of buildup or they're just disrespecting or desecrating the character altogether. But I was watching it, and people also have to understand that they're trying to do away with the Skywalker storyline in these movies. They're trying to build a new franchise. That's why you had Rey. That's why you have Finn. That's why you have Kylo Ren. That's why these are the central core characters, because they're trying to gracefully exit the previous storylines. Because if it's going to be the exact same thing as we've already seen before, then what's the point of making new movies? And I think that's the reason why people welcome The Force Awakens so much, is because for a lot of mainstream viewers, without realizing it, they basically just saw a remade version of A New Hope. And I think with, you know, obviously some modifications, but plot lines were the same. The build-up was the same. You had, you know, Starkiller Base destroyed. It was such a massive-looking building, just got blown away in the first movie. I was like, oh, okay. And I think the biggest problem is, like, yeah, and also Leia. Like, I've read a lot of criticism about how Princess Leia has tapped into the Force. I'm like, well, people, you've got to realize that she is too Anakin Skywalker's daughter.
Yeah.
She very well embodies every bit of power that Anakin Skywalker does. She just never used it on screen. So the time that, and of course I'm talking about, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into spoilers
I was about to say, we'll get into it in just a minute. Okay.
Well, there's a situation that happens where she utilizes the Force to her, the most potential we've ever seen her do. And people were, no, that's not, she can't do that. I'm like, yeah, she can. She's just never done it before. And we're lucky enough to get to see that happening. And what's funny was, like, months ago, they were already saying about how big of a role Leia takes in this film, how she does so much in such little time. And she did. I was like, oh my God, she used the Force. Because, you know, she's always been able to communicate, much how Rey and Kylo do with Luke. Like, in Empire, she goes and saves him and this and that. But we've never really seen her use any other aspect of the Force. And so I saw that, I was like, holy shit, that's cool. You know, I'm like, finally, she's getting to do something too. And, you know, I don't get it. I think that if it's not cookie cutter for mainstream audiences, and unfortunately they speak a lot for the film, which, again, I it's just crazy to me. I mean, and it's like I'm saying, you know, people are actually saying that this movie is worse than The Phantom Menace. I am, like, dumbfounded when I read stuff like that. They're like, way to go, Ryan. You made the worst Star Wars movie ever. You know, Phantom Menace,
no,
worst Star Wars movie. Rian Johnson, hold my beer. You know, all these mean, like, I'm like, no. I'm sorry? With the exception of the pod race and Darth Maul fight sequence, The Phantom Menace.
That's it.
Like, are you serious? And Mikey left. 16.
We lost Mikey.
I'll bring him back. Just keep going.
Okay. But I'm just like, that's the best you got. You think that this is worse than The Phantom Menace? In what realm, in what galaxy, if you will, is this worse than The Phantom Menace? I don't know. I'm just, and it's just baffling how much hatred is going towards this movie. And again, I think it's predicated on this notion that if it's not just handed to you on a silver platter, if the events don't unfold to you on a silver platter, you automatically reject it. And a lot of people are saying that they're blaming Disney. Like, Disney's to blame. I'm like, no, they're not. They just front the money. And and Lucasfilm, like, they made Force Awakens, Rogue One. Both are great, great movies. It's not their, it's not their call. And so I think people are just, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Okay, so just one last kind of deal before we head into spoilers. I want to know, what is y'all, like, with a couple new characters coming into the fold in this movie, what are you excited to see maybe progress even more in 9? Like a storyline or character development. Jeremy, what are your thoughts on this one? What are you excited to see more of in 9 after seeing Last Jedi?
A lot of things happened in The Last Jedi that are, since we're not going to get into spoilers, I really can't say much. But it took some interesting directions that I'm looking forward to seeing where Rey and Kylo end up in 9.
Mm, okay.
And, of course, Porgs!
It's not even that big of a spoiler, but you know, roasted pork looks delicious.
Man, Chewie should have chomped on that pulled pork sandwich with relentless intent.
But that little one was all innocent and didn't want him to eat his mama, probably.
I mean, but now, don't waste your food, Chewie. Just eat it.
Yeah. Alright, same question for you, Mikey. What are you excited moving on into 9 and maybe even probably the new trilogy after seeing the Last Jedi? What are you excited for them to build on more?
Well, something that the Last Jedi did and that I love to see is they introduced new Force powers, new things that you can do with the Force. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, more so than most, they really dive into what the Force is and how it's a part of everything. And there's so much you can do with it. So I'm really excited to see if they expand upon that even more. And maybe, because Rian Johnson's the one who did that in this movie, that I hope like his trilogy just takes a deep dive into the Force and we see some craziness.
Yeah.
But character-wise, my favorite character of these new movies is Kylo Ren, and where he goes in this movie and now going into 9, I really want to see where his character ends up being. I don't want to say anything because of the non-spoilers, but just, I'm very excited to see where his character goes.
Steven, what about you, man?
Well, I was thinking about how with the negative response to this entry in the series, I'm actually kind of wondering if Rian Johnson's position as the creative director of the new trilogy is put in jeopardy. Because I don't, that's one thing I can say about all the properties over there is like they're motivated by dollars like any cinematic production company is. But they're also, they do put quality out there. So I don't know. It's a weird give and take with this scenario. Like, I don't know if they would want to keep Rian Johnson around to do a new trilogy after the negative backlash that he's received. Because people are calling him out for it. They're not saying, they're like naming him as the sole one responsible for their imperfect Star Wars movie or something.
Yeah.
And while it's unfortunate that I haven't heard anything yet that he's not going to continue on with his own trilogy, but I do kind of think that, Disney brass will kind of take a step back and Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy. Because what's funny is that she got rid of Phil Lord and Christopher Miller for Solo, just like that, and I know there was some creative difference there, but one of the criticism was that they were making Solo too funny. So I'm thinking, well, what the hell? This is pretty funny too. And
right?
It's like a mixture of dark and humor, but that's one of the reasons they claim they removed those two from that project to bring in Ron Howard. But I don't know. I'm as far as this series goes, and that's another thing is like, this is the middle child, okay? They have to do something to stand out. They have to be and go through this avenue and this one to set up something, to make it different, to make it seem different.
Right.
And nobody even knows, like, the episode 9 could come in and full-on answer everything that everybody's been confused about. You know what's funny is that Empire Strikes Back had a negative reaction when it originally came out because it ended on such a down note that, you know, the Luke or Vader ended up being Luke Skywalker's father.
Spoilers.
And, yeah, spoilers. Sorry. My bad. Yeah. And that the Rebel Alliance failed in their attempt to defeat the Empire. And people didn't know how to take that. And that was a 3-year gap between those two movies. Oh, and, you know, they didn't have the, you know, they didn't have the internet to say, hey, don't worry, Return of the Jedi is coming out. You know, we'll conclude the story. So people didn't really respond to Empire with high praise. They were like, no, this is terrible. You know, Han's dead. Is he alive? Is he dead? Did they kill Han? Just so much negativity. And then now look at it as it stands in the pantheon of the saga. It's like one of the most revered entry of the series. Right. Much like I think Last Jedi will be. In 10 years, people are going to come back and look at The Last Jedi and be like, oh, okay, yeah, because they'll see where it sits in the series, in this new trilogy, and people are going to be like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Oh, yeah, I hope you're right, Steven, because I'm hearing from a lot of the people that aren't liking it, I'm hearing that, oh, you guys are in 10 years, you're going to look back on The Last Jedi the same way you look back on Episode 1, where, of course, everybody fell in love with Episode 1 because it's the first Star Wars that's been around for 15 years, and then when you look back, it's actually not that great, and so I hope you're right where it has the Empire effect and not the Phantom Menace effect, because I am a huge fan of this film, so yeah.
Yeah, and the quality's present in this one, though. Phantom Menace doesn't have anything to support its popularity, aside from the fact, like you said, it was the first Star Wars movie since Jedi. You know, yeah. What was the gap there? It was like 14-year gap, and so nostalgia propelled that movie to a higher critical response than it should have received. And Attack of the Clones is even worse. Like, you want to talk about...
Oh, God.
I mean, and still people are saying that this movie's worse than those two. I'm like, are you kidding me?
And Kathleen Kennedy had to sign off on this, you know, and she worked... George Lucas handpicked her. So people were saying, oh, bring back George Lucas. Obviously, he's not around anymore. He sold his company, but we're still getting Star Wars films. And in regards to Rian Johnson's other trilogy, he had to pitch them something that they needed to believe in enough to announce before The Last Jedi even came out, hey, we trust this guy to make 3 new films that have nothing to do with the main saga line. And I think that fans that don't like The Last Jedi might fall in for Rian Johnson's new trilogy because, in a sense, from their point of view, he can't mess up their characters, air quotes around mess up. So if he's starting something brand new, he can, you know, he's got his toys and he can play with them there and he doesn't have to ruin my Star Wars. He can make his own or whatever. So I think they'll keep him around for his new trilogy. I mean, they signed off on that before Last Jedi even came out. So Lucasfilm obviously has a trust in him. And, you know, critically, The Last Jedi is at, a 92 or 93. So, I think he's going to stick around.
Well, let's hope he does, because there's a lot of good things going on. People may, like you said, people may not see it right now, but I think they will.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. So, into spoilers. So, if you haven't seen the movie yet, first of all, what's wrong with you?
Agreed.
Don't listen to other people. Go make your own opinion, please. If that's what was holding you back from watching this, just go watch it.
Yep.
Just go watch it. So, if you have seen it and you want to hear how we think about it a little bit more into detail, it is time for the spoiler section of this review. Okay. So, starting from the beginning, and I was talking about the jokes, and Mike was talking about the joke kind of recalling to the Force Awakens. Dude, okay, so the joke was, Poe Dameron has Hux on hold.
Yeah, and he called him Hux.
this is like in the first 5 minutes of the movie. And I'm like sitting there and I'm listening to this, and what's he saying? He goes, "Oh, I'll hold. I'll wait."
Yeah, I have a message. I have a message for Hux, and Hux and says his whole speech, like, and then he's like, "Okay, I'll hold."
What can he not hear me?
Yeah.
And so, like, automatically there to me, it, like, that took me to, like, wait, is this a Spaceballs type of deal?
What took me to that point is the last part where he made the joke. Well, didn't make a joke, but brought in Hux's mom. He's like, she's got something very important to tell him about his mother. I was like, that's a little too, you know, 21st century Earth. You know, we're supposed to be in a galaxy far, far away.
And so, okay, so that sets the tone for me for this movie. So I'm looking for all this stuff now. I'm looking for, okay, so they're going to go there. They're going to do this with this movie. And so I think that's what propelled, like, even made it to me where I looked for the humor more and see where they pushed it just because of the beginning. And I should have stopped right there. But me being me, I guess I just was like, all right. I'm a downer now. But the thing is, the movie actually brought me out of that a little bit to still enjoy it.
Right.
Like, I'll go watch it again. My son loved it. And so, you know, there's that. Going to the first part of the movie, what did y'all think of how it started? Like, I that was my opinion on how it started. You know, did you go opening night, Mikey?
Yeah, I went on opening night.
So every time I've gone to see a Star Wars movie on opening night, those beginning credits hit, the music hits, everybody starts clapping and and cheering. Did that happen?
Oh yeah. I had, you know, I went to a theater where, you know, you had people dressed up, you know, cosplay and fighting with lightsabers outside the theater, so very much so. Once that fanfare hits, everybody's clapping and screaming, and it's great.
It's an event.
Yeah, it really is.
You don't have too many films that bring about this type of fan fever where it's an event, you know. And I went on a Friday afternoon during work. I don't tend to work much now that I think about it, but I'm like, you know, boss is away, like, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go knock out Star Wars. And there were only like 20 people in my theater. It wasn't very packed. So it was
because everybody was nice. Work.
Yeah, I know everybody was working, but it was kind of nice to have a quiet theater. But also I kind of like the interaction, you know, I like hearing other people react to the film too, like the cheering and the clapping, because I'm one of those people. I felt like I was the only one reacting to it when some big moment happens. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, right. But.
Okay, so with a bunch of, I would say a bunch, there's some new characters. Out of the new characters in this movie, who is y'all's favorite that got introduced?
We all know Jeremy's.
Porgs!
Porgs!
Jeez.
For me, I don't know. I a lot of people hate Rose. Like, they really do not like her character. Well, and she was probably the weaker point for the film for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she definitely wasn't my favorite. I liked Benicio del Toro. But I will say the one that had the best arc all around was Laura Dern. I thought she did really well because and you see it from the perspective of Poe, because we already know we can trust Poe. He's, you know, he's there for the better of any situation for the Rebel Alliance. So when he doesn't like someone, we automatically don't like her either. But she also presented herself with kind of a villainous intent. You didn't really know, but, you know, it was like, you're a coward, you're not doing this, and then she turns out to be, you know, a very commanding leader who also has one of the coolest deaths in any of the Star Wars trilogy, not to get all the way to the end, but, I mean, I was really impressed with how she handled that role.
Yeah, yeah. And
hey, and what color is her hair, Mike?
It's purple. Damn it.
Purple.
Oh my gosh, that's too funny.
But yeah, I'd have to agree that of the new characters, she was my favorite. And another complaint that people are saying is like, oh, why didn't she just tell Poe her plan? Why didn't she just tell Poe her plan? And when you watch the movie and you're looking at it, like, and you know, Steven put it the best, that like, because we like Poe, we trust Poe, and he doesn't like somebody, we're on his side. But A, she doesn't have to, because Poe has just been demoted for the idiot move that he made, getting a bunch of people killed. Mm-hmm. And the first time, that's basically what she says, like, you know your place, get in line, and do what you're supposed to do. And the other two times that he talks to her, he's spitting a bunch of words, and then he sees that she's gassing up the cruisers, and he freaks out. He starts flipping chairs and stuff, and then they escort him out. And then the next time he talks to her, he asks her, hey, what are we doing? And then he pulls a gun on her, so she doesn't really have time to tell him her plan, because he's freaking out. She takes him off the bridge, and then he's holding a gun on her. So, I don't know.
And commandeers the entire vessel.
And I think... And then I love the way that she went out, and it's probably one of the coolest shots in all of Star Wars. I will agree with that. You never think about what would happen if a ship going at light speed hits another ship, and so beautifully shot that the cinematography and then the sound, how it just cuts out, and all three times I've seen it, you heard a gasp in the theater, just like everybody catches their breath in that moment, like, and such a good shot.
Oh, I loved how they cut everything. It was just silence when that happened. Like, that's something you wouldn't expect from something like that. You would expect to hear, I mean, in a Star Wars, I mean, you hear the explosions.
Yeah, the
you
big see boom, the big right?
Your booms. And when they cut to silence and you just see this thing slice through, it's like, wow. Like, that just happened.
Yeah.
That reminded me in... That reminded me a lot of Gravity, some of the action sequences in Gravity, how Karan uses complete silence, but it's all visual, and it's the ultimate destruction of this space station, but you don't hear anything. And I love that, you know, and with this one, it just, like, you hear that, and it just ripped through everything. Yeah. Like, just such a great shot. And, of course, you know, it ends with Finn and Rose being the only two, like, okay, as far, and then the entire... First Order got completely wiped out, but those two. Those are the kind of things that people bring up, but that stuff doesn't ruin the movie for me. It's like stormtroopers can't shoot, but we can hit them every single time. Who cares?
And, you know, they weren't the only, and I've heard that too, they weren't the only ones. Phasma was there. She had like four or five guards next to her, and then there was more shooting at them. I just think, obviously, these are our main characters. They're not going to get killed. I mean... Some people do die, but they're not... You got to remember that they're trying to tell a story of these people. Like, if you look at any hero's journey, there's plenty of times where someone should have died, but because they're the main character, they make it out. So, when people start nitpicking stuff like that, I literally just think, like, you're just determined to have a bad time, aren't you?
Right.
Because you look at any movie, we go to any superhero movie, it's like, no, there's no way that person should have made it out of that. Oh, it's so lucky. No, it's like, yeah, that's the main character. We're telling their story here. Why would they just die like that?
And people tend to try and look for logic in a Star Wars movie. Like, this is pure fantasy.
Yeah.
Okay, stop trying to actualize certain events when the entire thing is just pure fantasy. And, I did think it was funny, like, I don't know why my mind went there, but, you know, basically the whole plot line of the First Order chasing what's left of the Rebel Alliance to wait for them to go out of gas and stuff, and I was thinking, I'm like, you know what this is? This is a nod to Speed. They can't stop moving. It's a nod to one of my all-time favorite action movies. You stop, you're dead.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, perfect, that makes sense to me.
But I like that. I like that it was a condensed story. It was this, like, it was a race against the clock. Like, we're running out of fuel. We have to figure something out. We can't jump away because they're just going to follow us, and then we'll be dead in the air anyways. What can we do? And we had three different point of views. We had Holdo, who obviously had her plan, wouldn't tell anybody, whatever. But she had her plan. we had Finn and Rose going off, and I'll admit, the whole Canto Bight thing, them on the casino planet, that could have been cut from the movie, and it wouldn't have made a difference to me. Like,
although, if that scene though at the casino planet or whatever, it would have been a lot cooler if the things that they were racing,
mm-hmm.
the horses or whatever they, I don't know what they were.
All right.
But if they were Tauntauns, that would have been a lot better.
Tauntauns are too slow, Chris.
No. No,
come on,
man.
You need speed to win this race.
But now I'm just picturing Tauntauns crashing through that casino.
Right.
That's hilarious. But then you had Poe, and the whole reason for that is Poe's character development. He starts the movie as the flyboy that gets everybody killed because he wants to take out that dreadnought, like disobeying a direct order to retreat, and he gets everybody killed. Obviously not everybody, but he learns, even when Finn and Rose tell them their plan, they say, okay, they're tracking us through light speed from this one ship. And his first thing, all right, so we blow it up. It's like, no, dude, you can't just go and shoot at everything. And he learns that by the end of the movie, because Finn is the one that wants to go and help Luke. And he's like, oh, Skywalker's out there, we got to go help him. And Poe's the one that stops. And it's like, no. Let's think about this. There's a reason he's doing that. He's doing that so we can escape, because we need to be that spark. So let's get out of here. You got to know when to fight and when to regroup. And that was what Poe learns. He learns to be a leader throughout this movie. And that's why I don't understand people that say there's no character development. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I was thinking of the Red Sand battle sequence, which looked visually outstanding. Stunning. I loved the look of that. And, you know, he's stepping on there, and it looked like blood. I thought, is he bleeding?
That's the first thing I thought, too. I was like, this guy's got an injury.
And they're like, no, it's sand. I was like, holy shit, that's so cool. And then, you know, there is that thing where I thought Finn was going to sacrifice himself and die. I was like, holy shit, are they going to kill Finn off already?
You know.
And then Rose sacrificed herself, and I thought, well, you just, like, got everybody else killed by doing right. that. And,
you know, I really... That moment, it sucks to say because it sounds so bad, but I wanted Finn to die. Like, because his character development is this guy from The Force Awakens that just wants to run. And the only reason he goes to Starkiller Base isn't because he believes in anything. He's going to protect Rey. And then he wakes up, and what's he try to do? He tries to leave again to go save Rey. He wants nothing to do with this rebellion, and throughout this, realizing that there is something to fight for, and by the end of the movie, he's willing to give his life for it. And I thought that was such a beautiful character arc, and I was like, I was tearing up. Like, Finn's gonna die, and I'm okay with that because this is where his character is going. And then Rose comes in and ruins it, and I will agree that Rose is not my favorite character. I would have rather had her sister. Her sister seems so much cooler.
Man, I was thinking the exact same thing, and not to sound like chauvinistic or anything, but she was a lot more, you know, attractive. And then I thought, man, she was with the way that the bombs were. Yeah, and then like she caught the bomb detonator. You know, it was just like really cool. And I was like, is that Rose? That's not the girl that plays Rose. And it was like her sister. I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Was it Faith or something? And but yeah, I agree about Finn. It's like his love for Rey supersedes his cowardice, and I love how it ended up being him looking out not just for Rey but for everybody.
Right.
And then that also leads to Luke Skywalker's return, you know, quote unquote. And I thought it was cool because, you know, what people are like saying, they'll say that, oh, he was just a hologram. I'm like, yes, but you didn't know that entire scene. So you're fully immersed in what's going on. Like, he's doing his cool moves. I'm sorry, but when they fired everything that they had and he just brushes his shoulder off, that is some straight Jedi pimpness right there. That was awesome. And you don't see that kind of personality from Luke. Luke has always been more of a kind of Obi-Wan type, like real laid low and playing it cool with the Force. So for him to like expel that type of personality was just so cool. Yeah. I was like, yeah, baby, yeah. You're done for now.
Yeah, I took all that as just, he's just trying to get Kylo Ren down there. So let me show off. But it's cool seeing it more times. They drop, throughout that whole fight, they drop hints that Luke's not really there.
With his feet,
they show Kylo Ren. He's got the wrong lightsaber. He looks 10 years younger. And then, yeah, the main thing was you see Kylo drag his feet across the sand, and it leaves the red. And then when Luke does it, there's nothing happens.
There's no red.
So,
see, and that's like Rian Johnson touches, man. That's like, because like Brick is filled with those little nuances like that. Because it's basically like a noir film, like an indie noir film, and every little thing is a clue. So, and much like that, like he brought that to this movie. I just don't get it. And I will say though that when you see what happens with Luke, it's basically, I mean, he's right. When he says, Rey, you will be the inspiration for this rebellion, not me. That's so true, because it is Rey. It's all about Rey and following her journey now. She's the one that's going to lead them out, just like Luke did when Obi-Wan sacrificed himself way back when.
And then Luke's speech at the end, when he tells Kylo, you're wrong. The rebellion is reborn. And then the camera flashes to Poe. And he says, and the war has just begun. The camera flashes to Finn. And I will not be the last Jedi. And it flashes to Rey. It's a perfect passing of the baton. Here you go. These are your new heroes now. And people are so focused on, oh, that's not my Luke. And what? It's not like the original trilogy. No, it's not. Because it's not supposed to be anymore. These are new characters. And they're taking us on a new journey. And these are our heroes now.
And you want to talk about touches. Like, I am so glad that they took the visual cue from Yoda from Empire Strikes Back in Jedi and used that as their CGI recreation instead of trying to create a whole new visual, you know, perspective of Yoda. Like, with Attack of the Clones, I mean, he had to be younger anyway. But when you see the Yoda in this one as his Force ghost, like, he looks just like he did in Jedi.
It's the old Yoda.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that is so good.
It honestly took me out of the movie for a second. And I hate to say that.
I loved it.
And I got into a fight with my brother about it, because he was like, no, that's Yoda. Like, he was yelling at me. He was like, that is Yoda. And I was like, I know, but especially coming out of the Canto Bight sequence, they had a little man completely CGI in there, and so they're using CGI stuff for this stuff, and using a puppet for Yoda, like, it threw me off, and honestly, he didn't look, to me, he didn't look right. He seemed like he was too dark, and it just threw me off. But now watching it again, like, I'm all in. It's like, oh yeah, there's Yoda. Like, it doesn't get
me
now.
The spectral scope of a Force ghost?
So let me ask you, okay, you were talking about the relationship between Finn and Rey. And now, obviously, there's going to be some sort of relationship between Rey and Kylo. And, real fast, Kylo with his shirt off, bro, put it back on. He ain't got done working down there. Like, come on, man. Anyway, do you think in 9 we're going to get y'all are going to kill me for saying this, but this is what entered my head, a Twilight-esque type of love triangle? Are we going to be Team Finn for Rey or Team Kylo for Rey?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I actually thought the triangle was going to fall between Rey, Finn, and Rose. And I don't see Kylo and Rey as a romantic entanglement. I see them as something more or something other than that. I didn't once get this, like, romantic love for them. I got this more fraternal love from them, if you will. They seem more like connected, like Luke and Leia was. And luckily they weren't going to be kissing on screen before they realized that they're brother and sister or anything. But, and I know he did say that your parents were from nothing, but it's also Kylo Ren telling her that. He will tell her anything to get her to come to the dark side. That's what they do. They're like the devil trying to sell you their soul. They will tell you anything you think you want to hear just to go to their side. So that, again, being the middle entry of a movie, they can't give everything away.
Right.
We still don't truly know what her origin is. Like, she doesn't have this ultimate power in the Force, because Luke is saying, I've only sensed power this strong before, as in Kylo Ren. Well, if she has it that strong, she has to be from something. And I know in the last shot of the film, well, but to go back to your question, Chris, so I think that, you know, I don't think that there's so much of a romantic thing going on, but like when Rose kissed Finn, I'm like, you over Rey, I don't think Finn's gonna go that way. I'm sorry to tell
that
you,
kiss
but
was just super awkward in general.
It really was. It was like,
you know, speaking for the
forced.
Asian race, we don't kiss very well, okay? I'm just
practice on your hand, Chris.
I really didn't practice on the poor chemistry either way, though. Finn and Rose, I don't think their chemistry played out like well at all. I figured she looked up to him more of a hero, so when she threw the love word out there, I was like, oh, okay, why not? And then that awkward kiss, man. Ugh.
They seem like buddy cops, you know, like good partners. Not love partners, but good, you know, rebel partners, you know, like, hey, you know, all right, here we go. But
I think Rian Johnson was trying to throw a spark in there with Rey and Poe meeting at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I saw that little glance between those two.
That's where my money
especially
goes
when she's
nine.
Moving. Yeah, that could be it too. You know, she's moving those rocks. She moved Poe's heart.
There you go.
I didn't even think about that. That's a good point.
Okay,
though.
And you know, we do have to talk about Leia's Superman moment really quick.
That goes back to what I had said in the non-spoiler stuff. Like, she's using the Force. We don't know. And, Mike, you were talking about how the Force, it could be whatever it needs to
right.
be. It could serve any purpose that it needs to. So how do we not know? It couldn't put some protective, you know, Force plasm around her long enough to save herself.
Yeah.
And when she used it to pull back into the ship, I thought, holy shit, that's amazing. Leia's using the Force. I was so excited about it from that perspective. I failed to see kind of the logistical aspect of her floating in space.
Yeah.
But
or the space ghostness
right.
of it.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, I have no problem with Leia using the Force. I actually prefer that Leia does use the Force. And, you know, I'm huge into this stuff. You know, I read the books and all that stuff. And recently revealed in a book called From a Certain Point of View, Yoda actually wanted to train Leia instead of Luke. He would have rather trained her because of the things that he sensed in her. And so she's used the Force throughout, you know, in books, and she is Force sensitive. And they prove that too in The Force Awakens when she feels what happens with Han. So she is Force sensitive. I just, it was very out there to have someone floating through space. I don't care for that scene.
Would it have made more sense if, and I think it would have been more of an impact, like, yeah, she used the Force and it was cool, but what about if she stops the ship from exploding?
That
saves people.
That's what I think would have been cool. And see, this is what I like to do, is just, oh, that if those, you know, torpedoes are coming in and they make impact, and she uses the Force to stop everyone from flying out until, like, some blast doors close or something, and that use of the Force strains her enough that it does knock her out for the same majority of the movie, but, you know, we see her use the Force to stop everybody from flying out and to hold herself down or something like that, and that strain, you know, knocks her out or something. It's just, to have her floating out in space and come back is just so weird looking.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know.
All right.
And they,
well,
I did like how Kylo, you know, held back.
Right. So that, yeah, that
her.
Glimmer of light. But then, you know, those other two Thai guys just
say, so we got this shit, sir.
I see him getting back on the ship and being like, dude, why did you do that?
Yeah, no, he kills both of them.
All right, so we're running kind of long. I know there's still a lot to talk about, and we could probably go on for another 2 hours.
Part two.
Yeah,
least.
Part two. It's going to have to come. But a couple last questions here before we wrap up. Throughout, you know, the movie, who, and we've given a lot of praise to the movie. It was, all four of us really enjoy it. and I've asked you what your favorite characters were in this and that. What was your least, your letdown in this movie? Your biggest letdown, character-wise, in this movie? And I can tell you, mine is Phasma.
Duh.
Pissed me off.
Yeah.
She was my number... Well, she was in my top three best favorite Star Wars characters, and then they just waste her.
I think it'll be a new trope for all these movies to find a new way to kill Phasma.
Because I don't think she's dead either. I think she's still alive.
I mean, they make a point to show that her armor can reflect blaster bolts and just... Like, they're nothing. Like, she didn't even flinch. So I don't think a little fire would kill her, but that's just that's to assume that she landed on something and then got on a ship and got out of there.
I hope so, because Brienne of Tarr needs to live. So what about y'all? Jeremy, haven't heard from you in a minute, man. What's your biggest letdown in this movie?
Letdown-wise... I'm trying to think.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
Yeah, I really don't know of any.
Really? Okay, Steven?
Aside from the... it wasn't so much with a character. I think the length of it was a little too long. And I was surprised that it was pushing 153 minutes. I thought, damn, that is the longest Star Wars movie. That's pretty long. And I thought, you know, that's great. I could watch a 3-hour Star Wars movie. But watching this, I could have said, yeah, I could have trimmed out about 15, 20 minutes of it to make the pace go by a lot more, you know, rapidly. But in a good way to help the story and stuff. Much like a lot of people, I will say that Rose is kind of my least favorite character. And what's funny is that Rogue One was able to create a whole crew of new characters that were all important, all exciting, all providing something to the story. I thought, okay, how could they not have a couple of new characters be so, not necessarily annoying, but just where you just don't care? And I was really surprised by that. And again, different writers, I suppose, but Rose, I don't know if they were, what their intent was with her, but I, some could say that Luke Skywalker is another new character because he's totally different in this version, and I did not like so much when he threw the lightsaber over his shoulder. I kind of wanted to cry.
Oh, I thought that was great. That was hilarious.
I mean, it was funny, but I was like, oh, I kind of wanted to cry a little bit. I'm like, okay,
Force Awakens leaves that moment, and it's supposed to be, to me, it built it up like, this is supposed to be some dramatic moment. He finally gets his lightsaber. And then all he does is take it and then throws it. I'm like, come on.
Would you think he was going to pop it on and wield it around a little bit or something?
Yeah, no, maybe.
No, he looked at it and was like, nah, screw this thing. I'm done.
I did think that the X-Wing that was submerged in water was going to make some kind of, you know, return, if you will, and I don't know, and like I did like the Yoda scene, but then it was kind of odd that they burned the entire Jedi library. I thought, well, that seems a little overkill, but I guess maybe with the length
and then when Rey stole all the Jedi books anyway, so. Before Yoda burnt the temple down.
That's true. But not a lot bothered me about the movie.
There's another scene I want to talk about real quick. The whole, mirror Harry Potter, show me my parents moment. So could have cut that out. That was so weird.
Oh, where Rey and Kylo were communicating with each other and they could see each other?
Yeah, and she was like in the
her fourth vision in the cave, right?
Yeah.
When she sees
I thought that was kind of cool.
I thought that was really cool. And like, show me my parents in the Force. They it shows her to be like, it doesn't matter. You're the thing that matters, and your story is, and it's the same thing Maz Kanata told her in The Force Awakens. Like, the longing you seek is not behind you. Like, look forward, look to the future. You're the one that's gonna do this, and she still doesn't get it because even after that, she confronts Luke about what he did, and she pulls the lightsaber on him, and he's telling her, don't go. This isn't gonna go the way you think. And she thinks that she can turn Kylo, and she does. She holds the lightsaber out again to Luke, like, one last time. Are you gonna do this? And he doesn't take it, and she says, well, then Kylo's our last hope. And she still doesn't get the fact that, no, kid, it's you. You're the hope, not Kylo Ren. He's done. He's stuck. And what I said earlier when I said, I'm excited to see where his character goes, because now he's unleashed. He's the supreme leader now. He doesn't have Snoke anymore. And let me just say, that whole throne room scene was awesome. Them fighting the Praetorian guards and all that, just
those the red guards, those are not the Knights of Ren.
You know, I heard speculation that they are. I feel like they could be, because Luke talks about how Kylo Ren left, and he left with a handful of his students. So if he goes and he makes them the Knights of Ren, and then once he is fully committed to Snoke, since Snoke's like, hey, you work for me, so now these guys work for me too. I mean, they could be, but I still feel like we might see them in 9. Like, the Knights of Ren might be him or Kylo's guards now that he's Supreme Leader.
That would be cool.
I'm just glad he laid the Force hand on General Hux. Like, how long is this dude going to talk to you that way before you just put him in place, you know?
Yeah, I like their back and forth. And even Kylo knocked out on the floor, and Hux goes for his blaster to be like, you know what? Let me just get rid of this kid. Like, their whole back and forth is cool.
Man, when he's held up and then Rey tosses him the lightsaber, he just catches it, turns it on, and puts it through that dude's
head. So good.
That was badass, man. That was really cool.
And then
stuff.
Even when she's locked in with that one guard and she drops the lightsaber and catches it, and then, like, yeah, so good.
Well, that was something else with Snoke. I was kind of surprised that they didn't really. I thought maybe Snoke was. You know how Emperor Palpatine, or Senator Palpatine, whatever, he looked like a normal human person. Mm-hmm. So whenever he got full-on emperored by Mace Windu, and his figure was deformed and disfigured or whatever, yeah. I thought Snoke was going to be some person of importance, that the same thing happened once he fully ingrained the Sith, and it deformed his physical appearance. And I thought there was going to be some kind of reveal there. So I will say that's actually one of my bigger, gripes, where I was like, well, I kind of felt bummed out that they didn't really go more into who Snoke was. But right. It's all basically just a stepping point for Kylo Ren to be supreme, you know, and which kind of makes sense after watching it.
And not only that, but myself too. I spent the last 2 years with all these Snoke theories and who's Snoke and where could he possibly come from. And it's even multiplied because I dive into the books and I know all this other canon and ancient stuff and blah, blah, blah. But no one in The Force Awakens was wondering who Snoke was. Not a single person was like, who is this Supreme Leader? Like, they all knew, like, Snoke. No, it wasn't him. It was Snoke who did it. Like, no one was questioning who Snoke was. So, story-wise, they never set up, oh, there's a mystery behind Snoke. He's just the bad guy. And if you think back to when Return of the Jedi came out and we see Palpatine for the first time, they don't tell you who Palpatine is. All you know is that he is the Emperor. He, bam, whips out Force Lightning out of nowhere. Like, whoa, you don't know anything about him. And we were spoiled by learning his backstory in the prequels. But when Return of the Jedi came out, there was no backstory for Palpatine. He was just the Emperor. And so
right, he had that one, much like Snoke in Force Awakens, he had that one holographic conversation with Vader and Empire. So that's the only thing you knew of him. You just knew that he's the big bad.
And so when people are like, oh, we were robbed, we don't know who Snoke is, it's like, were you? Were you really? And I'm sure eventually...
He's Gollum.
And it obviously didn't matter who Snoke is, because
stories about Kylo Ren. And
can I tell you, the lightsaber deaths in this movie were on point, man. When he twisted that saber in his seat and just turned it on, I'm like, oh, well, he just sliced half of his body off. That's kind of cool. All
right, there goes Snoke. That's cool.
Don't trip over his entrails while you're whipping these Praetorian guards.
He'll be back with robot legs.
Hey, there we go.
Like Darth Maul.
Dude, he'll have Darth
Maul. They go to the same robotist.
They'll each have each other's limbs. It'll be like Snoke's top, Darth Maul's legs. All right, guys. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. We're gonna have to do a part two of this. There's still so much more to talk about, especially with
tons, man.
With Mikey being here, I'm sure we could talk for another 2 hours.
Yeah,
I feel like we've just barely covered just a cusp of his knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, Mikey, real quick, man, tell the people where they can find your show and give yourself a little plug real quick.
All right. Well, as stated earlier, we are Big Screen Breakdown. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Music, Stitcher, Podbean, basically anywhere that you find podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Big Screen Pod. And if you disagree with anything I said about Star Wars, I'd love to talk to you about it, as long as you keep it cool, because we can disagree, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. So
that's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Our Chris preach. And Jeremy.
But see, this is different. Me and Jeremy go way back. We're like an old married couple. We can bitch at each other. It'll be fine.
That's true. It's not like you just met each other.
That's right. I mean, I'll buy him a porg and it'll be fine.
Pulled pork sandwich.
Pulled pork sandwich. That's my new favorite dish.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, since you're here already, we'd appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button. And when you go to Mikey's Big Screen Breakdown, hit him a subscribe button too.
Yes,
they are excellent show. Like I said, I don't miss one episode. I'm there with them all the time. So, just like them, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. And we're all over the social media world, on Facebook and Instagram. Just search the Screen Addicts Podcast. Well, I forgot our name there for a minute. Weird. Okay, search the Screen Addicts Podcast. And on in Twitter, find us at @screen_addicts, and that is spelled ADDICS. Fellas, before we sign off, any last statements?
I will say that I completely forgot to mention it, that the holographic image that R2 plays for Luke, which was a perfect 40th anniversary to the original Star Wars, was just oh so nice.
Yeah, I love Luke and R2 reconnecting.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was awesome.
All right, Jeremy, last comments and thoughts.
One thing that would have been really cool is when Chewie broke into Luke's hut, busted the door off, and Luke was like, "Chewie, what are you doing here?" And they were like, "We're in the Falcon, and we're here to take you back." He was like, "Falcon, where's Han?" And it would have been awesome for Chewie to have a little monologue scene telling Luke what happened to Han.
Yeah. Give him a moment. He didn't really have too many.
Yeah.
Because then you would have got to see Mark Hamill's really good acting ability to him really emote to Han's death, hearing it from a Wookiee.
Yeah. Well, because he understands him, so it would have
been. Oh, yeah, he knows exactly nice. What Chewie's saying.
Cool.
Not bad.
All right, Mikey, last thoughts, my man?
I just think for anybody out there who may not like The Last Jedi and has only seen it once, I challenge you. Go see it again. Leave all your expectations at the door. Try to just absorb everything that the story is telling you, because there is a story. There is character development. And I think you'll like it a lot more the second time. So it's a great movie. And I love Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't like it, you can kiss Jeremy's porg.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for this evening. Merry Christmas if we don't have an episode before then. Merry Christmas to you, Mikey, and your wife, Genevieve.
Thank you, yes.
Happy Happy Life Day on Star Wars.
Holiday special. Earth Christmas life special, day. Yeah.
Happy Life Day.
All right, so guys, as for me, good night.
Adios, amigos.
Good evening.
Thank you for listening to the Screen Addicts Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,